Signal and Noise, Number 7, June 2008. I've got one topic to go over today. I want to talk about a movie that I recently saw called The Man from Earth.
What if a man from the upper Paleolithic survived into the present day?
You know what could happen? Yeah, the pancreas turns over cells every 24 hours, the stomach lining, in 3 days, the entire body. In 7 years, but the process falters. Now, if a core can get his immune system, that is perfect detox, perfect renewal, then yeah, he could duck decay.
We were just talking about a caveman who survives until the present time.
And he hasn't aged a day in 10 years. Every woman on the faculty would give anything. Yeah, you know, that's a good
one. I don't have eyes in the back of my head. I can't hear a free walking. I am not anywhere. Superman.
There have always been legends of such a thing as a creature, not quite human, taking not the blood, but the life force itself.
God spoke of to man to make his word clear.
And yet, 4 minutes of silence completely baffled my dream. Who do you think I am?
You are absolutely certifiable. You stand alive and tall in a graveyard that you helped to kill. And perhaps...
it's time to die. The screenplay for The Man from Earth was written by author Jerome Bixby. Mr. Bixby is probably best known as a science fiction author, specifically for a number of episodes that he wrote for the original Star Trek television series. Jerome Bixby passed away in 1998, with this screenplay as the last piece of work that he completed before his death. His son Emerson picked up the torch, and in 2007, with director Richard Schenkman, they brought the script to the big screen. Produced as an independent film with a cost of about $200,000, there are no special effects, no fantastic locations. I don't know if it is despite this or because of this that I have found this to be one of the most enthralling films that I've ever seen. It is certainly a testament to the script, the director, and the actors that a film, which on the surface is simply a conversation among friends, is so very captivating. I'm going to try and get through this without dropping any significant spoilers on you. Some information will come out, but I'm not going to discuss any of the major elements of the film that you can't find out by reading the synopsis on the DVD box. If you haven't seen the film yet, please don't spoil it for yourself by reading anything online about it. Just go out and get the film, sit down and watch it without any of the spoiler information that is easily available online. As I mentioned, one of the strong elements in the film is the cast. We have, in no particular order, the protagonist of the film, history professor John Oldman, played by actor David Lee Smith, biologist Harry, played by John Billingsley, who many science fiction fans might recognize as the character Dr. Phlox from the Enterprise television series, art historian Edith, played by actress Ellen Crawford, Dan, the anthropologist, is played by Tony Todd, another Star Trek alum and probably more well-known from the Candyman films. Sandy, another historian, is played by actress Annika Peterson. The archaeologist of the film Art, played by William Catt, and this may date me a little bit, but I know most well from the 80s television series The Greatest American Hero. College student Linda, played by actress Alexis Thorpe. And rounding out the cast, we have psychiatrist Will Gruber, played by actor Richard Riley. Richard Riley is one of those character actors whose career spans decades, and who, while you may not be able to place him specifically, when you see him, you will recognize him. To add another interesting little tie together, we have a screenplay written by an author from the Star Trek franchise, and then we have Tony Todd, John Billingsley, both fairly well known for roles they portrayed in the Star Trek series. And just to cap it off, the lead actor David Lee Smith has made an appearance in the series Voyager, and Richard Riley did make some appearances in one of the Star Trek franchise shows as well. I don't know how much of this was done on purpose, how much of it was just coincidence of casting, but it's still a nice little touch. So, we have Professor John Oldman packing up to move elsewhere when a number of his colleagues show up to say goodbye.
Would you like to tell us what the hell that was all about?
I don't like advice.
Kind of the point of a goodbye party, John. Went through a certain amount of trouble, you know. Could at least wait a few minutes. Huh? Eating some of the food we so feverishly prepared.
I apologize, Harry.
Why are you moving so quickly? You only decided a couple of days ago. You got the history jokes, Henry.
I wish.
Well, taquitos, chicken wings, roasty toasties, and beer. If we'd had more time, we'd have done something a little more grandiose.
In the process, John decides to try a little experiment and explain why he's leaving, so our story unfolds as he presents his seemingly preposterous claims to his highly educated friends. What follows is about a 90-minute discussion that covers a host of topics. What is immortality? How much would a 14,000-year-old man really know?
A Cro-Magnon, then. When did you first realize this?
When the Cro-Magnon was first identified. When anthropology gave them a name, I had mine.
I have 10 degrees, including all of yours.
That's over the span of 170 years. I got my biology degree at Oxford in 1840. So I'm a little behind the times. The same in other areas. I can't keep up with the new stuff that comes along.
I see your point, Tom. No matter how long a man lives, he can't be in advance of his times. Why did you do that?
I wanted to see how fast you were. Check your reflexes.
I am not in any way Superman.
Yeah. Well, I'm a second-degree black belt.
Give it another 1,000 years.
How would a person prove or disprove John's claim about himself?
Let me just say something right now. I mean, there's absolutely no way in the whole world for John to prove his story to us. Just like there's no way for us to disprove it. No matter how outrageous we think it is, no matter how highly trained some of us think we are, there's absolutely no way to disprove it. Our friend is either a caveman, liar, or nut. So while we're thinking about that, why don't we just go with it? I mean, hell, who knows? He might jolt us into believing him, or we might jolt him back to reality.
The story delves into the history of religions, the nature of human relationships, and common myths throughout history, how they merge and how they change. Where do legends come from? The structure of the cast provides a dramatic tension to the story. The divergent views and the conflicts really make the story. Each of John's friends represents sort of an archetype for the conversation. Dan, the anthropologist, is sincere, open, rather eager, and he really does want to believe the story that John is telling all of them.
That's very interesting. What has it got to do with John?
Oh, he might be a man who lives outside of time as we know it.
Art is openly hostile because he's not willing to accept the absurd claims his longtime friend is now making. His hostility probably stems to some degree from concern for his friend who's exhibiting rather questionable behavior, which is what brings the psychiatrist Will Gruber into the film.
Some of you would call me a psychopath, others would be angry at a pointless joke.
Well, John, some of us are angry now. I see what's going on. You're playing the good cop, Dan. That's fine. Just enjoy it. I think this whole thing is just a crock. I should leave, but I'm going to stay. You know why? Because I want to see what the hell this is all about.
Yes, so do I. What is this all about?
Well, let's ask Dr. Freud, who's just arrived.
Edith is less hostile, but still does not like what she is hearing from her longtime friend. And her views do take on an emotionally more powerful downturn when a discussion about the origins of Christianity come into conflict with her literalist views on the subject. The other characters and their perspectives I'm going to leave open because I don't want to tell you everything about the film. I want to leave some of this open so you have some surprises when you go see the film. So So as the story unfolds, we learn a great number of things about history, humanity, myth, and legend. But we're still never really able to determine, is John telling the truth, or is this just a fancy tall tale? Once more, I will urge you to see the film. It is a hallmark of just how entertaining and intelligent a movie can be with nothing more than a good story and talented performers. Personally, I'm fascinated by the concept of immortality, or at least a greatly extended lifespan, much longer than what we currently have. And so many of the concepts presented in the film I find very fascinating because they talk about it from a perspective I had never considered before. Most of the time when we talk about this concept, we look at it from the perspective of now looking forward into the future, without looking into the distant, distant past of our world, and what it would have been like to go through all of those ages of history. I can't say it enough. I find the concept to be incredibly fascinating, and so the film has really touched something deeply in me. My personal perspectives aside, it is a really remarkably well-done film. It should stand the test of time. So please, see the film, go to your local video store, put it in your Netflix queue, however you see the film, but do check it out. I do not think you will be disappointed.
How long's forever? Whoever really has it.
Lucy and John, I'll see you both in detention this afternoon in 204. Public school. She had never dreamed of such decadence, never imagined that young people could be so happy or healthy. The girls had such freedom, a wonderful chance afforded to them to go out into the wide world before making babies. It was nothing like the world she had come of age in. Had it not been for the plague, she might have had her own babies. Detention would mean coming home late, which spelled distraction and trouble on the night of a kill.
Who the hell are you, Lucy?
Promise me that you will never tell anyone. I'm a vampire.
A silence ensued.
His energy began to slip away and she sank her teeth into his fat carotid artery.
Podiobooks.com presents Forever 15. Written by Kimberly Steele and read by the author.
And that will wrap up the show for today. I don't have any new feedback. You can send email to signalpodcast@gmail.com or visit the website signalandnoise.org. There's an area to leave comments on each show. Please feel free to visit often and speak much. I don't have any new question for this week, and I haven't received answers to previous questions. So again, check out previous shows. See if there are any questions that interest you and you're willing to share your answers. Send either a text or an MP3 file to the email address, signalpodcast@gmail.com. And I wish to thank you all for listening. Signal and Noise is produced under a Creative Commons license. Attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives. Sound effects are provided by ERH from the Free Sound Project. All clips and music used in today's review are owned by the copyright holder of the film, Jerome Bixby's The Man from Earth. Thanks all for listening, and I hope to hear from you soon. Carry on.